Welcome to the Perp Web Podcast, hosted by Joe Bosch.
Okay, and welcome back, everyone, to the show. Happy to see everybody. There is Amber Maurer, and John Ingram's back with us, and Stephanie Ebus, and there was Rodell over there. He ran off screen, but Stephanie and Rodell are both perfusionists, a married couple. Amber Maurer, who we just talked about, is a perfusionist. How many years? 2 years now, Amber?
1.5 years.
1.5 years. You got to start. Mm-hmm. You got to start being like the rest of us. Okay, 1.5 is 2. 2 is almost 3. You just always sort of have to add a little bit to
it. 2 years it is. I'll take
exactly.
2 years.
Exactly. Take 2 years. Right. Exactly. 1.5 is close enough. And then of course Stephanie and her husband are Amber's dad is a perfusionist. I said that earlier, and is the department director at the Mobile Infirmary, and Amber has followed in her dad's footsteps, and that's really something to be proud of, I think. I talked to him on the telephone, and he is very proud of you, I will tell you that. Stephanie, of course, has been a perfusionist now for over 20 years, right? 20 years?
Right.
Over 20 or just 20?
99.
So 21 years, yeah, 21 years, 21. She's 21 years old today. And Stephanie has been a perfusionist, graduated from Ohio State. I think you all know her from previous programs. And of course, John was just here. So I'm just going to tee this up because I think we have really, what is that noise? Huh?
I can't hear him.
Okay. Somebody making coffee over there? Or, yeah, Rodell must be. Rodell is cleaning with the vacuum.
He's hiding from the camera because he needs a haircut.
I understand. It's very good. Okay, so I think we have some real interesting generations here. We have John and I, who are really old. We have Stephanie, who is an experienced perfusionist. And then we have Amber, who is relatively new to this profession, although she grew up in it. But still, I think, so those are some interesting perspectives. And her dad and I are contemporaries in terms of time. In fact, I think he has a couple of years on me. One of the few people I know that have been doing this longer than me. There are not a lot of them left. I'm holding out. I want to be the oldest practicing perfusionist on the planet, or the number of years. So that's my goal in life, okay? That'll keep me alive for a while. So I want to tee this up with, what is perfusion? Is it a job? Is it a career? Is it a profession? Where do we fit in the world of medicine? Are we, you know, like shift workers? Are we, you know, most of us aren't really. Some are, some aren't. But how do we view what we do, what our responsibility is, what our commitment needs to be, and then how do we balance that against our philosophy about work and work-life balance. So I'm going to turn this over to Stephanie, Amber, and John, and you guys are going to be up. And if you have a question for me or you want me to add anything to it, I will. But I want to hear from you guys and sort of get a perspective from someone besides myself. So, Stephanie, why don't you lead it up?
Okay. Well, I think that we clearly are professionals. A professional is identified as having a clear objective, a clear skill that they've learned. So we've had specialized training, and we have a set skill knowledge. We have educational knowledge, and we have formal qualifications. So definitely I would call all of us professionals. As far as a career or a job, a career is what we would say our professional journey is. Desire, I feel like you have a career when you have a desire for upward growth and long-term goals compared to just, so every job that we have as a perfusionist or anything related to this profession is a part of a continuing growth. I think that when you have that career mindset, you have motivation to keep learning and learning from your experiences, educating yourself, growing and development opportunities. And we measure that career by personal satisfaction. And also people measure career growth and feel like they're in a career wherein they feel like they're advancing, like titles, positions, achievements, advancements in work, and pay, obviously, also. For me, what I see in our profession is the nemesis of career and career stagnation. So once we feel that we're no longer desiring to grow, or we no longer see opportunity for growth in our own job, then your career mentality switches to a job where I no longer want to keep learning. I think I'm doing great the way that I am. That starts to lead when you feel no longer like there's anywhere to go in your career. The burnout feeling, the stagnation, and you start feeling like you're just there for a paycheck. And I think that that can hit us any time in our career and we can bounce back from it. Sometimes you're at a job where you start to feel very stagnant. And that's when maybe you know it's time to move on to something that makes you feel more personal satisfaction and growth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think those are great thoughts. Amber, did you want to chime in on that?
Absolutely. Go ahead. I would agree with Stephanie on the aspect of Perfusion being a career and it having a stepping stone between, you know, doing anything between research or teaching or some type of administration job. And then some people that find it as a job, like you said, the burnout, where they're not feeling like they're doing anything other than getting a paycheck and just pumping and going through the motions. That's when you see people leaving, and not to hate on sales reps or anything, but you start to see people growing out of the perfusion world onto other health jobs, including the medical sales, working with the valve folk and that kind of things. But as far as career versus job, I think even, you know, it being a career and that being a stepping stone to go and teach or do some type of medical sales, that's still, you know, you're moving up in your career.
Well, Amber, that's an interesting point. I'm curious to know what the other panelists may think as to whether or not you think medical sales is a step up from clinical perfusion.
If medical sales is a step up from perfusion?
No, I was asking you that.
Yeah. I think to be in the medical sales with cardiac-related supplies and equipment, then, yeah, you should have some type of background of cardiac surgeries and kind of know what's going on in the OR to be a successful medical sales rep. You know, my background, I did medical sales, collecting placentas for a couple of years, and that was my stepping stone into perfusion, into the OR world. So I had some type of OR experience and knowing the kind of morale and temperament in the OR settings. So either or, going from, you know, medical sales into perfusion or perfusion to medical sales, I think it's a good segue to those that type of job or career.
So give an old person slant on this.
Yes, would love to hear from you, John.
So, you know, so I just wanted to get a real quick. So, Stephanie, you graduated in '99, is that true? And then Amber, you graduated a couple of years ago. By the way, what you always do is you count your years of perfusion when you tell people how many years you have until you have enough and you can chop those off again. So that's just a little tricky. But anyway, so you know, my thought about career or job is, I think that feeling that you had, and the reason I asked when you graduated, but what feeling you had when you either first heard about perfusion or you were in perfusion school and you're getting close to being done and you're just going through the whole process, that feeling you had about the field, that excitement, hopefully was a big excitement about you, about what you are doing, what you're getting ready to do, that feeling is what I hope never leaves. Now, I had 20 years And I got out of perfusion for quite a while, and I came back about 5 years ago. So I had a good, when we graduated, remember this, Joe? The burnout average was 7 years. People only lasted seven, the average person lasted 7 years in our field before they got out, meaning some got out much sooner than that. So I went 20 years, and I would say the last five at least, I was probably feeling that burnout where, you know, I loved getting called in and I loved coming in. And those last 5 years, it wasn't like that anymore. It was drudgery. And then, you know, I was able to retire for a while and come back. And that really did me a lot of good. But I guess my only concern is, and even in our generation too, we had the same type of thing. We didn't have every person in our class was just going to live, eat, and breathe this 24/7. There was always a percentage who really just looked at it as, well, it's a job and I'm going to make money and it's a wonderful thing to do. And I'm sure that happens in all ages. But that excitement that they've had, always wanting to do the best, that excitement of taking care of the patient and learning and always wanting to be better, that I think is transformative to making this even something even beyond a career, almost like your life's calling and your life's worth. Mm-hmm. And I think, I hope that still exists a lot today. I'm so detached and removed from new grads and perfusion schools that, you know, I hope that still exists quite a bit today. I think it does.
Yeah, I think you bring up, you know, all of you bring up some excellent points. And I think, you know, Stephanie, starting with you, you know, discussing the ability to grow within the field, having other things to do, finding what it is in the perfusion industry that you have a passion for. You know, it may not be like what your boss might think he or she may want you to have passion for, but it is, you know, it's you have to find what it is that you find stimulates you to want to do this job and to consider it something more than a job, that it's a career and something that you're going to do for the duration of your professional life, unless you decide to, you know, go back to school or go into a different industry. And I mean, all those are, you know, very possible. You know, certainly there's a lot to do in perfusion, from academics to just doing the chip shot cases in a place, to doing things like this program, to doing consulting work. I mean, there's so many things you can do. And some people find, I think, reward in different, you got Corona? In different things, you know, they find pleasure, they find satisfaction in just doing a good job on each case that they do. Some people want to do other things, and you have to respect that, and you have to find the job, I think, that gives you that best opportunity to do those things that helps to keep you interested. I don't want to belabor the point, but, you know, I've had my moments, too. I've been doing this for a very long time, but I did leave the industry from full-time to part-time. I didn't leave it entirely, and I continued to work because it paid money. And I did something else on a full-time basis for 4 years. And it was very rewarding for me. I needed to do it. But really, I do love this profession. I started, you know, at a time when it was, you know, back in 77 is when I started my training. I was, you know, relatively fresh out of the military. I had worked as a EMT at Charity Hospital in New Orleans just before going to perfusion school after I'd gotten out of the service. You know, I've been in it, you know, with the exception of going part-time for those 4 years in the early 90s. It's what I've done. And I guess my point I'm trying to get to is I feel it's our personal responsibility to find what we need to grow in whatever our job is. And if the job doesn't provide that for you, then I think that's where you start to have to consider, well, what's important to me? And if I really need this, do I need to go someplace else where I can have that? And of course, we're a very small fraternity, so that may not really exist. Amber, in your particular circumstance, I think going to a medical device company or something like that is something that interests you.
I'm sorry, you're cutting out a little bit for me on my side.
Yeah, I don't know what that is. That sounds like a train going through somebody's house. I have no idea where it's coming from. It's not coming from here. But with that said, that doesn't float my boat. Now it floats yours. And I think that's where we're different. People are different. All kinds of different people go into perfusion. And John, to your point, I think that jobs sometimes are hard to find, sometimes they're easy to find. We've seen that pendulum swing back and forth. But there are people, and I've been places for temporary assignments or whatever it may be, that the environment was just toxic and corrosive. And people were miserable and they hated their jobs and they hated going to work, but yet they stayed for a whole variety of reasons, I guess. But I don't know. Those are sort of my thoughts about how you three view this. There are three very different perspectives, but all of them have legitimacy. What say y'all? Steph, you go first.
John, I'm curious. You were talking about the 7-year burnout. Why do you think that happens with perfusionists?
Well, I don't know if the numbers are still that today. I'm talking about in the 80s and 90s and 70s. In our perfusion school, we were told, well, the statistics were the average person last burned out at 7 years. Some lasted 3 or 4, and some lasted 10. But the average person after 7 years had to say, I've got to find something else. I got to, find something else to do. I have to go into sales. I have to get out altogether. I'm not sure what people did at such a young age after 7 years. I'm still wondering, but most of the people that I know, somehow managed to stay in quite a bit longer. But I think the reason was back then is that the average person worked 70, 80 hours a week. And surgeons were, I think, on average, a lot more brutal, less forgiving. I think that you gave your life to this a lot more than a reasonable person would be willing to do. And I had a friend of mine who, within a couple years of graduating, put a bullet through his head in his hotel room.
Wow.
In his second year, and he was a perfectly fine perfusionist. I don't know what led to that, and I think that's happened a time or two. I mean, but what do you think it is now? Does anybody know what the burnout rate is for in the last 10 or 20 years?
Yeah,
I know. I
go ahead, Steph.
I was looking at dental school or doing something else, and I'm trying to think back why, because I don't think that it was a thing that I was like working so much, but I think maybe at that time I didn't see any way to grow, or it just seemed like a very stagnant type of job. Like, you work those first few years to get so good and confident, and then it just kind of levels off, and then I had to then adjust and find new ways to channel that energy in positive ways. Like, now just doing small things in the group and feeling like I can improve things in our department, or work with the surgeon to do something new and mentor younger people coming in. I found satisfaction in that.
That's very nice. I like that. Amber, you're 2 years into this business. You're 2 years into this business. How long do you think you're going to stay?
How long do I think I'm going to stay?
Yeah.
Well, this is my career choice. I have no plan at this, my 2-year mark, to be leaving this profession. I don't know what else I would do at this point. You put in, your 4 or 5 or however long your program is of schooling. I feel this is my calling in life to do. And like kind of what John was saying, of people coming into this thinking, oh, I'm going to make a bunch of money. I think those are the type of people that will burn out earlier, where for myself, and I know my classmates that I graduated with, they had a passion for this job or this career. And I think if you have that passion you did and that excitement you had in school and throughout your training and for the couple, you know, your first couple years of practicing, I think that will help with the longevity of keeping perfusion as your career long term.
Very good. Very good. I like that. I like
Joe, that. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah. A little back, little feedback, but not bad.
Yeah, I've said this for very many years. When it comes to making money, not only in perfusion, but actually in any field, but it's very true in perfusion. This is the secret. People always want to know what the secret is. The secret to making money, the most money you can possibly make, is to forget about how much money you want to make and think solely about how good of a perfusionist you can be. If you are absolutely phenomenal perfusionist, the money will find you. That's the mistake people make. The money will chase you down because people want you and surgeons want to work with you. And when you go to leave, everybody comes to a stop and says, wait, 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 how can we keep this guy? Other people say, how can we get this guy or gal? Okay, so if you don't get those, you're not negotiating from a standpoint of strength when you are money first and my performance level second. That's the mistake that people make. I think in perfusion, it's huge. It's probably big in most medical fields, but it does apply in almost anything. So that's been my secret, and I didn't figure that out. I just was so hungry in my field in my first few years that I just soaked up every bit of knowledge and I went after it. And I found people coming to me and I said, wow, they're coming to me not because of any other reason. They've seen that I published a few papers. They've seen this, they've seen that, they've seen the other thing. When they ask a question, I have a pretty intelligent answer. And word gets around real quick. People want good employees. Right, Joe?
I think you're 100% right. And I that was a very insightful statement that you just made. And something that I agree with 100%. I think that, but you know, you also, along with being a very competent, capable clinician, you have to be humble. I think that you have to. This is a very competitive business we're in, and perfusion. I think you said it was huge, but I think it's very small. We have 4,300 of us. It's not a whole lot. So we're a very small fraternity, but we're very competitive. But you should be able to be competitive while still being a facilitator for everyone to be successful from a clinical perspective and personally too. You have to be a nice person. At the end of the day, you just can't be a mean person, and you can't be selfish, and you can't be arrogant. And you can't be pompous, and you have to stay humble because I've been through it. Anything can happen to anybody at any time. And yes, years ago, John, I agree with you also that the environment was horrible. It was a horrible environment for many years. And surgeons were sometimes just abusive. And it was unnecessary. And I'm talking about the old guys. And they would attack you and blame you for, you know, every bad outcome or every issue that happened in the room. And there was a high suicide rate. I mean, it did exist. AMSEC, in fact, had a suicide hotline manned by a clinical psychologist who was available essentially 24/7. And so it was just amazing to me that actually existed, but it did. And I'm a different kind of person. If you treat me like that, I've been through the military and some other, systems where I got a pretty thick skin. But there are some people who that kind of thing really affects them very deeply, their ability to process it. And that really comes down to we're all human beings. People are different. We're all the same, but we're different. And how we manage that kind of stress. But I think perfusion has gotten much better. I think surgeons that we work with today value us. by and large, there's always the exception, but there are exceptions now. I think now we have really, this profession has come into its own of really being an integral part of the overall heart care team and a valued member of it to especially the surgeons and even the nurses and everyone else. We do a lot of teaching, but we also learn a lot and we respect each other. And I think that that respectful environment has made a huge difference in what this profession is today compared to what it was, John, for us back then, and maybe even for you, Stephanie, in your early days. I don't know exactly, but I know there was a major change somewhere around, you know, late 90s, early 2000s, with how it is now evolved to where it is today, which I think is a much, much better place.
You know, it seemed like for the first 10 or 15 years, including perfusion school, every single thing that I learned was learned by tough love. You know what I mean by that?
Oh, yeah.
Nothing was ever given to you nicely. Everything was beaten to you. And let me tell you, that is a long, lonely road, because every night you go home, felt like a kick in the stomach. I don't mean perfusion school. I mean on the job. And I had to come back every next day and work with that same surgeon all over again, because there was only one or two surgeons a lot of time at the hospital who worked with us every day. And if that's rough, every day, some days can be good and some days can be just terrible.
What is it? Stephanie, could you mute your mic when you're not talking? Apparently, they've figured out it's coming from your area. So could you just mute your mic and then John can talk, but when you talk, unmute your mic. It's on your screen. So John, I'm sorry, but we really couldn't hear you very well. And did that fix it?
Can you do Amber too?
Oh, Amber, can you do yours too? Mute your mic as well, if you know how to do it.
Is that better, you think?
Yes, now we can hear you. Go ahead, do that again. So if you could say that again.
That, you know, for what seemed like the first 15 or so years of my career, including a couple of years of perfusion school, and even the first jobs, almost every single thing I learned was beat into you, like in tough love style. You know what I mean? Nowadays, I have conversations with surgeons, and they're like, you know, like equals, like friends talking to you. That didn't exist years ago. It was a very, very much, you know, a master-slave type of conversation. Mm-hmm. And you got things beat into you. And one thing about that strategy is that, I guess, if there's a good side, is you never forget it, because, you know, how could you? You had to suffer so much learning it. But it's painful and it's stressful. And I have no doubt I lost years off of my life in the first 20 years of perfusion, having it be so brutal for so long, you know, and the lack of sleep, the number of hours, and the on-the-job stress, you know, all of that, Stephanie, as you asked before, 7 years is not a very long time when it probably took you that many years to even get to the point of graduating perfusion school, because a lot of us had a background before that in college, and then you do another couple years of perfusion school, and then for it to only last that many years because it was that brutal, it was kind of a sad commentary. So I'm kind of glad it lasts a lot longer now.
Well, John, I don't think you look bad for 35, frankly. I think you look pretty good.
I'm 35 in dog years, Joe.
I hear you. Right. Okay, so Steph, why don't we do this? Why don't you, if you'd like, to respond to John and maybe some closing thoughts about what you think about all of this, and maybe some advice you can give to the younger folks like Amber, and maybe even some advice you can give to the older folks like John and myself.
Oh, I don't think I can give you guys any advice. I think I've enjoyed listening to you and I've learned so much, and I appreciate all the programs you guys do and all the work you put into this. I kind of have seen over my career that when people start feeling trapped, like, we're so specialized And it's not easy sometimes to move to another job because, you know, in Houston here, there's like a lot of jobs, but sometimes you live where if you want to make a change, you have to be willing to uproot your family. And I noticed it can create a lot of bitterness in perfusionists that if they, you know, what do we do with the skill set if we no longer want to be perfusionist and we're used to having our, the pay that we have, and then where do you go from here? And I think that for me, I had to get back to being really grounded on I'm so grateful for this profession and for my career. And if I'm really not happy, I need to make a change in myself to go find, I love doing perfusion, so there's a world for me here. So I just needed to find the paths and avenues to make it fulfilling long-term. And so the way I feel now at 20 years, I feel like I'll continue to grow, and I hope that never changes for me.
That was very nice. Amber, what are your thoughts?
I think with the younger generation of perfusionists, it helps in the kind of frame we're in right now with the social medias and perf web and the conferences and the newer technology on equipment and stuff that kind of help us, want to stay in it for the long run. I think from where perfusion started 50 or so years ago to where we are now definitely has progressed in all sorts of aspects. So I think it's still going to be challenging down the road, but I also think that the time frame that we are in right now with perfusion and the technologies that we have and the outlets that we have to continue to grow and to learn, I think that will help too with that burnout feeling and such. But I really appreciate what Stephanie had to say and definitely what John was saying. That put a lot more perspective in my eyes in regards to the field as well.
Good. That's really good. John, what are your final thoughts?
Yeah, I think you guys are hitting right on it. You know, Joe, and I'm not just saying that because you're such a not a nice guy. I'm saying this because you have to like the boss that you work for. That is really, really a big feeling, a good feeling to have if you like the person you're working for, number one. Number two, I think, Joe, you said it too. You need to try to work in a non-toxic environment. And that may not depend on your boss. Like Joe, you know, your different perfusionists go to the different hospitals. You're not necessarily there, but the environment that's created at that hospital are what your perfusionists have to deal with every day. So if you like who you work for, if you like where you work, but even if you don't totally like it, try to improve it. Try to talk to the people that maybe are spearheading the negativism in your environment, and hopefully your job changes will be minimal. I think there are advantages to changing your job every now and then. There's some pluses to be gained from that, but from someone who had my own group also and had as many as 18 or so people working for me at one point, fortunately, a lot of my people stayed for a very long period of time, and most of the feedback I got was, you know, they liked the way I treated them. I tried to treat them fairly. And that's another thing. As a boss, you treat one person a little bit better than somebody else, and that turns negative all the other people who didn't get treated that way. So as a boss, it's very important that the people like working under you. That helps people stay a lot longer and be a lot happier.
Well, the only thing, John, that's very true. I agree with you 100%. But there, you know, there's liking and there's respecting and there's, you know, Stephanie will tell you there's always a divide. I think I have told her this as she has moved into the management role within this company and is going to continue to grow within this company as the company continues to grow. There has to be a separation. You can be friends, but you really can't be friends. And I think you all know what I mean by that. There's a divide because you're supervising people, and you have to avoid that favoritism or even the perception of it. Now, in my case, Min is my favorite, number one, and that's never going to change. And number two, Stephanie has only thrown her phone one time as a result of me. So, and I'm very proud of her for that. So that's my closing comments. I'm very, Stephanie, do you still have that phone? Does it still work?
It does, but don't push me.
See, that's what I get, John. That's how it is. That's how it is here at HET. But this is about Perf Web and perfusion education, so we'll get off of that. All I can say is I'm gratified and I'm humbled by everybody here on the panel that was willing to take time out of their day and to do this and contribute to this conversation. We've gotten a whole bunch of comments on Facebook and YouTube, and I'm assuming Twitter, Magic is over there with that. But a lot of people have made some comments about jobs, just this one topic, short conversation, nothing formal, but it's really good when people can get around and talk and just, you know, really have a discussion about how they think, because sometimes people think things and they wonder, am I the only person that thinks this? And I think having these discussions really helps people to feel that they are not out there alone with these feelings, because perfusion, as great a job as it is, and it is a great job, not unlike the surgeons, at a different level. And I don't want to be arrogant here and think that we're surgeons, because we're not. We're mid-levels, and what we do, it's very important. But it's a lonely place. Perfusion is a unique and lonely profession, because when you are by yourself and most of the time everything just goes swimmingly and everybody looks at you like, man, you got the best job in the world. I mean, this is ridiculous. You make all that money and that's all you had to do today. But when it all goes wrong, when it all's falling apart and everybody is just looking at you, they're looking at you, but backing away at the same time, because they don't want any part of this disaster that you are there to manage and deal with. Teamwork really helps, but when you are by yourself, and that is going to happen, and it happens a lot, we work independently, you really have to know what you're doing and be on top of your game in order to have successful outcomes in things that no one imagined you would be able to get through or pull off. So it is a unique profession. It's an enigma, it's misunderstood. Most people don't even know what a perfusionist is. They think we sell perfume. They have no clue what it is. But what we do is so critical, and we have so much influence on the outcomes of patients that I think that it is sometimes misunderstood and frequently underappreciated, because when the case goes well, it's generally because we've had a good day. My final thought. Anybody else? There's silence. Huh?
Well, I'll tell you one thing in relation to what you just said, Joe. I once had a surgeon with the patient basically had a stroke, and we regular CABG case, normal case, and the next day, next couple days, patient didn't wake up, and it turns out that, you know, somehow the patient had a stroke. And the surgeon was trying to blame me. He was trying to blame me for the fact that this patient had a stroke. And I said, I tell you what, I said, you know, it was so rare. We had a very low complication rate. We hardly ever had this happen. We had a really good practice where I was at. And I said to him, I tell you what, I said, I'll take blame for this stroke if I get credit for every one of the patients that didn't.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
He's like, oh, no, he didn't want to go over that. So then he stopped blaming me for the stroke.
Well, I used to go to work, and there was a surgeon I used to work with, and he was one of those guys. And, I just got fed up with it. So I took a piece of tape and wrote saboteur on it and just put it around my OR cap, and wore it all day, because that's just what he thought I was. So I may as well just announce it. I'm just here to sabotage you, that's all. And he didn't see the humor in it. I did, but he didn't see the humor in it. So I do want to tell you that Gibby Roseland says that younger perfusionists, so that's you, Amber, are very lucky with all the technology and more experienced teachers you have. Old respected perfusionists were teaching themselves. and researching and teaching themselves. And some of that's very true. Somebody had to teach us. I mean, somebody did teach me, but there is a level of truth to that. A lot of what we do today is derived from what happened way back when. But you know, we're going to be gone one day. You, Amber, are going to be there. Stephanie is going to be me. She's going to, and you guys are going to be sitting around talking about me. I'll be probably in an urn somewhere. And maybe you can get a piece of me. You guys can wear me like around your locket or something like that, Joe. The Joe Lockett. But I think we all teach each other, and I think that's a good thing. We all, Facebook, another, okay, I'll do one more, because we got to go. It's 7:30. I'm getting tired. I don't see it. I don't see it. I mean, it doesn't matter how many times you tell. You can tell me the last one. You can tell me the first one. I see nothing. Hold on.
So, Joe, I want to come to Amber's defense here while you guys are doing that. In 1987, when I graduated, the people before us said the exact same thing to us. You guys have it lucky. You have membrane oxygenators. We had to use bubble oxygenators. The people before them said, you guys have it lucky. We had to use a Travanol bag. You guys have bubble oxygenators. The people before them said, you guys have it lucky because we had all reusable connectors and everything. It took 8 hours to clean all the reusable aspects of the oxygenator. That push.
Good point.
That somebody in front of you has it easier than you never has gone away for 1,000 years. And so, you know, Amber, don't listen to what Joe just said. But no, really, everybody hears that. And I just think it's funny after all these years, you know, everybody keeps pushing that forward. And we heard the same thing from the people who graduated 4 or 5 years before us, that we had it easy. And it wasn't as hard as they had it, you know, walking uphill with barefoot in the snow to perfusion school every day.
I had to do that. So, I had to walk uphill.
Yeah.
In 3 feet of snow, both directions, John. So I don't want to hear it. Salman also says that
I don't take much offense to it, because I do believe, you know, with the technology and Google and YouTubes and stuff, you know, we have some advantages, but. You know, 10 years down the road, there's going to be something new that we're, you know, that's going to be something like, oh, well, I wish we y'all have it so lucky too, you know. So I think like what you're saying, every year or every so often, it's going to be the same pattern too. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know what? I've gotten old enough I could say it, and I'm going to stick with it. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it. Salman does say that. Their burnout was due to slow surgeons. That can burn you out, okay? That's true. Slow and bad, okay? I think all of us here have probably experienced that a couple of times in our lives. Different perfusion culture, you know, and attitudes being negative. They say that they feel like today perfusion departments are better structured, more perfusionists are available, and therefore less burnout. I think that's relative. I don't know that that's 100% true, Salman, because there are still places that have single perfusion accounts and they're there by themselves. And I wouldn't want to do it. I've done it before. It was horrible. I wouldn't do it. But for some people, they actually thrive on that. And I think that's the thing. Find what you like. I didn't like it, so I didn't do it. I did it, didn't like it. Moved on, did something else. I think we just all have personal responsibility to find our place and not moan and groan and complain about your job that you hate. If you hate your job and you're not happy, consider what you can do to make your job better if you want to stay there, or if it's intolerable and unchangeable in your view, then go somewhere else. But in the process of doing that, because we are such a small group, I highly recommend that you make and keep good colleagues. That doesn't mean everybody has to be friends, but like and respect each other for what we all collectively share in what we do. And the same, because we all have the same stresses in our jobs. That's how I feel about that. John, what do you say?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, what I said before, You have to like your environment, the group you work for. They have to respect you. You have to respect them. And, you know, you have to like the environment that you work in. And if you can change it, great. And if you can't, then at some point, you know, it's better to try to move to somewhere else and get a fresh start. But toxic environments are prevalent, unfortunately, as human nature would have it.
But I think that exists in every profession, not just perfusion. I think medicine is much better than it used to be, but I think that it may be more pervasive in the medical industry, but it's not it's not unique to medicine. I think toxic environments exist everywhere, including the post office. I mean, we saw that some years ago, right? I mean, how many times did we hear that phrase? So we've never heard them say, you're gonna go perfusion. So that's, you know, maybe it's not so bad. All right, we're gonna say goodnight. It's been great, I've enjoyed it. We're through the second week. We have one more week of Corona 30 to go. The Friday next week, I am going to have a six pack of Corona sitting here to celebrate the end of Corona 30. And I'm gonna ask all three of you to be on the program with your own six packs. And everybody else in the audience have them, and we're just all gonna collectively have Corona to celebrate the end of Corona. So thank you all very much. We'll see you Monday, same time, same station. Thanks, everybody. I appreciate everybody. Bye.
Thank you.